So glad the Fabric Podcast was next up in your playlist. We talk a lot about life woven deeply, and in this episode, you'll hear Ian McConnell talk about what it means to be rooted in others. If it sounds like we're forgetting that important element of being rooted in yourself, check out last week's podcast for that important starting point. Here's Ian, helping us tend to, expand, and see the ways we're already rooted.
It's good to be with you this morning. I'm Ian McConnell. We are smack dab in the middle of a series called Rooted. It's a three-week series. So last week, we talked about being rooted in self. And next week, we're going to talk about being rooted in God or the divine or whatever name you use for that, that energy, that what is it. And today, then, we're in rooted in others. So as kind of a refresher, we're talking about rootedness in God, self, and others because whether we like it or not, we are rooted. We're rooted in our own stories. We're rooted in ancestry. We're rooted in lineage. We're rooted in, in time. We're rooted in what we can control and even in what we cannot control. So roots, biologically, when we're talking about roots, they're the underground structures beneath plant life that takes in water and nutrients. It gives stability and anchoring to plant life. It sustains the plant in times of drought or famine. And it keeps the ground from eroding around a plant, right? Roots are incredible. When we're talking, though, about ourselves in this conversation, about being rooted, we're similarly talking about our identity. Who is it that we are? We're talking about sustainability. Where are we finding sustenance and life and energy? And we're talking about being grounded. And so today, as we dive into being rooted in others, I want to suggest that the word other is a really broad category that includes all people, like people in our families, people in our schools, workplaces, neighborhoods, right? People you know, people you might see their faces and recognize them, whether or not you even know their names, but also like every person on earth, humanity itself. We are rooted in humanity itself. But there's more. When we talk about others today and in these conversations, I want to broaden that understanding to not just mean all people, but also all of creation itself. Of course, we're connected with other people and have been created by God, I believe, to be able to feel one another's joys and each other's pain. Have you noticed that? When somebody else is feeling joy, we kind of feel a little joy. When somebody else is feeling pain and we become aware of it, something kind of churns in our guts. We're empathetic beings, but our connectedness extends far beyond just other people. Like, our actions have consequences on the earth, on the environment itself. It's a fact that we've become more and more acutely aware of. In this vast ecosystem that is life on earth, we're also aware that our very existence as people is reliant on an entire chain of life and wellness that includes, what, plant life and clean air, water, bees. Any bee fans? Yeah? Oh, yeah. Woo! It's all connected. You name it. All of it. Our life, the lives of everything. It's all connected. So I just to kind of get our juices flowing, I want to invite you to wonder with me about, take stock of your experiences with others in your life. Who have been the people who have known you really well? Somebody who's significantly challenged you, maybe. Somebody who perhaps even has revealed something to you about yourself that you wouldn't have identified on your own. It occurs to me that humans aren't really all that human without other humans. We tend to do well together. To recognize something about each other, to tell each other who we are, and to find common roots together. And it seems like all of creation is designed a little bit like this. I'm not sure that humankind is actually all that special in this regard. Do you know what the largest, most massive living organism is on Earth? Does anybody know? Aspen! Ding, ding, ding! Yeah, there's this aspen grove in south central Utah. It's called Pando. And it's one gigantic interconnected root system that takes up something like 106 acres. It's composed of more than 47,000 clone, trees. They're all clones of each other coming out of this one root system. If you were to pluck it out of the ground, shake all the dirt out of the root system and all the other stuff connected to it, it would weigh over 13 million pounds. This thing is huge. The other thing that's kind of cool about it, it's estimated to be somewhere between 9,000 and 12,000 years old. Yeah, it's incredible. Super, super old. So here's the thing about this massive root system. It coordinates energy and resources in the root system. So where there's need over here, maybe at the edge of the root system, the whole of the system identifies the need for nutrients, for water, maybe for protection against disease, something like that, and it sends it to the place in need. It's really amazing. It's a beautiful reminder, I think, for us that as individuals, right, that self-sufficiency is just, quite frankly, impossible. We don't do anything on our own for ourselves. Not really. We need others. Even though self-sufficiency or, you know, rugged individualism is sometimes lauded or honorable, it's kind of like the idea of perfection. Self-sufficiency is just a pipe dream, not really worth chasing. But the reality of root systems goes even deeper. There are ongoing studies right now that we're just starting to scrape the surface of our knowledge about what's happening underground. Not only are roots reaching out and getting entangled with one another and connected to one another as individual species, but there's this whole underground ecosystem happening all the time. Have you heard about mycelium, fungal networks? This stuff is just absolutely mind-boggling. These mycelium and these fungal networks will attach to roots of various kinds of trees and take sugars from the roots and in exchange send helpful nutrients that they can process that the tree needs. And they act as this underground kind of internet. Like scientists are calling it the Wood Wide Web. Under hundreds and hundreds of miles. Every step you take, there's like miles of fungal network under your feet. It's absolutely incredible. Maybe not in here, but outside on the soil, it's true. I hope not in here. Maybe not. So we're going to take a look in just a moment at the trailer for a documentary called Fantastic Fungi. But first, I want to read this little blurb that the filmmakers wrote about this film. They said, "When so many are struggling for connection, inspiration, and hope, Fantastic Fungi brings us together as interconnected creators of our world." I think we might be onto something here at Fabric. So let's take a look at this short trailer here.
My mission is to discover the language of nature, and I believe nature is intelligent.
There is a world under the earth, full of magic and mystery. It holds the consciousness of nature's connection to all living things.
You know, these mushrooms, they can heal you, they can feed you, they can kill you. It's not like a vegetable, and it's not like an animal, but it's somewhere in between.
They support life, they convert life.
As you're walking, there's about 300 miles of fungi
under every footstep that you take, and that's all over the world.
The bulk of the organism is growing underground, and it's composed of these long threads called a mycelium.
Almost everyone knows about the computer internet. The mycelium shares the same network design.
It's amazing what we don't know about mushrooms. They really are a frontier of knowledge.
You can filter water. You can create medicinal compounds almost on demand.
They have incredible capacity to make things change very quickly. So I am super hopeful.
The psychedelic members of the mushroom kingdom are fascinating.
I have been a guide for around 350 psilocybin sessions.
The most glorious part was that it made me feel more comfortable with living because you're not afraid of dying.
We need to have a paradigm shift in our consciousness. What will it take to achieve that?
We can heal the planet. We can build the future. And our world is fantastic.
It's a little free advertisement for Netflix, isn't it? Just even watching that and learning like a little smidge of information about mushrooms and about what's happening under the ground that we don't see but impacts our daily lives in a profound way is just another one of those reminders that like the more I learn, the more I realize how little I know. Like, it's the gift and the curse of learning, right? That the more we learn, the less we actually know. Pretty cool. I saw a little meme, I don't know, a little line on the internet from some user, no professional, but they said that mycelium networks exist. And you think rugged individualism is the path to success? I think that's great. It's a good reminder. To be rooted in others is to recognize that we're not actually apart from others. But we are a part of all others. Many people in Western culture tend to view themselves as separate from much of the earth, or maybe share that sort of old King James biblical understanding. One of the creation stories in Genesis is like, we're supposed to have dominion over land and sea and animals and sky, like humankind has dominion, but it's not dominion over. It's like our job is to be good stewards of all of it, to tend to the roots and the fungi and the monkeys and the sloths and the trees and the birds and the air and the water. Like that's what we do. That's our calling in all of this. As nice as all of this sounds, though, the question for me that keeps popping up is, why aren't we doing it? Why aren't we finding ourselves living in a much more interconnected, kind of mutual way with all that is? I suspect that there are a lot of reasons that we could come up with as a group. Maybe a lot of reasons that you could come up with why that's difficult in your life. But here are some of the thoughts that I've come up with in my own thinking. I think one is just that cultural messaging about self-sufficiency and competition in the marketplace. Is this language that you're familiar with? Probably. We live in economic models that pit us up against one another and really do attempt to sever us from our rootedness and our interconnectedness to others and to all that exists. These messages about scarcity and that we need to compete for resources and that if somebody else succeeds, it comes at the cost of my success. There's only so much to go around, right? Another challenge, I think, is that embracing being rooted in the complex web of others and thus not going it alone means that we have to slow down. Does anybody feel uncomfortable when you have to slow down. I do. In order to nurture our rootedness in one another and in all that is, we need to take the time to connect in a more slow and deep and human level than the kind of transactional relationships that or obligatory relationships that we sometimes find ourselves in. There's a really good proverb that I kind of hold firmly to. I'm not sure what the source is. Sometimes it's quoted as a African proverb, and sometimes it's attributed to Hillary Clinton. So I don't know who said it. But this proverb says, if you want to go fast, go alone. But if you want to go far, go together. If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. Another reason that living in an interconnected, rooted with others way is hard, I think, is that what if we reach our hand out to others in that slow way, in that desire to be connected in an intentional way with others? What if we reach out our hand and it's rejected, right? What if it's not reciprocated? This is risky stuff. Or what about, you know what I say, what I mean when I say those people? What do I do with the fact that to be interconnected and rooted in all others means that I even have to be connected to those people who are so othery, right? Like so different from me. For all these reasons and a ton more, we realize that to be rooted in others is messy. But messy is not a defect. One of the most profound reasons, I think, that people gather together in churchy communities like this one is that when movements like this are rooted and grounded, they can be safe places for us to gather together and to practice, right? To practice having our eyes opened to a different way of thinking, maybe even a better way of being in the world, so that when tension and division erupts, we're practiced. So that when conflict happens, we can draw on this practice and guide one another toward doing life differently. I'm pretty sure that none of the barriers to doing life in a way that reflects our deep interconnection and rootedness in others, none of this is new, right? Like this stuff is ancient, this conflict and division and desire to go fast alone. It's nothing new. We know that a little less than 2,000 years ago, when Pando, the Aspen Grove, was a young pup, 7,000 years old, there was this community on the western shores of modern-day Turkey. It was called Ephesus, and it was one of the early urban centers where the fledgling Jesus movement gathered together. So, like, it's a huge town. It's a port city, right? So, like, economic hub. There's ships going in and out, and trade routes are networked out from this one city, and there's just a ton of people, right? Lots and lots of people, some from really far away places who are bringing with them cuisine and culture and language and practice and religious preference and all that is different. And so there's this incredible diversity of thought and practice in Ephesus. And in the midst of all of this, that's where Paul started a church. And we know that they struggled with how do we do this rootedness stuff together. How do we maintain community when we have so much difference among us? We know that because the people who curated the Bible decided it was important enough to preserve, and now we get to read their mail. so So the letter to the Ephesians. And so despite the conflict that they experienced around religious practice and cultural difference and all that, this church gathered in Ephesus was encouraged by Paul to be rooted and grounded in love. And that as they recognized their deep rootedness in mutual love, right? Mutual love, respect. Putting aside their differences in opinion and practice, that they would come to know the unknowable. How's that? To know the unknowable. I think there's a deep truth being told here. And I think it's something like living as we are, like fully as we are, authentically who we are, no more and no less. And letting others do the same might be one of the deepest expressions of love and sustainability we can offer to one another. A love that sustains, that anchors community in what it looks like to be rooted. Who each of us are, all of us, the stuff we love and the stuff we'd rather hide away, is a part of this intricate ecosystem of being. It's all a part of the root ball of all things. And living in that rootedness is a part of sustainable, centered living with clear identity and grounding. Just like in ecosystems that we are aware of, like when we talk about the bees, if the bees go, guess who's next? Us, right? Just like in these ecosystems, you in all your you-ness are an integral, important, beautiful part of this ecosystem of interconnection and rootedness in community and with the whole world. It would cease to exist as we know it if you weren't in it. And we need each other to show up as we are. I need you to show up as you are. No more, no less, with our roots all tangled together, for the sake of being interconnected creators of our world. And so may we show up as we are, no more, no less, to get all tangled up together. May it be so. Amen.
Thanks for listening. May this simply be the start of the conversation. Reach out if you want help connecting with a group virtually or in the Twin Cities, and tag @FabricMPLS with your own thoughts on social media. You can also stay up to date and find other resources on our website, fabricmpls.com.